it's Michael Rayner.
Welcome to the Chris Ruggiero podcast.
That was my impression of Michael on stage because he yells a lot when he's on stage and it's awesome. So, pretty pumped about this one. I've been working on chatting with Michael for a while to get him on the show, so I'm excited that he finally joined me, and it was great. And so Michael does some similar things to what I do in my live show, in that he is, I guess, kind of primarily a juggler and variety artist. But he's been in all kinds of stuff throughout his career so far, including, you know, branching out into TV and commercials, and he's been kind of seen all over the place, which is really awesome. And the take home for this was, there was a little bit where he talks about hearing no's in show business, especially where he just gets fired from a certain job and then gets rehired and then moves on to the next thing. You know, these no's that we always hear aren't don't need to be as important as we make them, because behind every no, there's a yes waiting. So push through it and, you know, make it happen. Don't let when someone tells you no, it's usually not anything personal for, you know, what you actually do. It's just maybe you're not a fit or whatever. So cool. Thanks for listening. And make sure you guys subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or the podcast app or Stitcher or wherever you're listening. And if you enjoy the show, or if you want to hear anything different with the show, leave a rating or a review over there on iTunes. We'll take a look at those and bring you whatever you want next. Okay, thanks for listening. This is Michael Rayner. Mistakes in show business are part of the normal thing.
Oh, there's a million mistakes.
Every day. So I think people that see what we do as performers or entertainers, they think we have it all figured out, and
absolutely.
There's this thing. You're doing this. You have, you know, your name is up there on that thing. You have a show. You know exactly. You're locked in. But then, for me personally, I'm like, I don't really know what I'm doing most of the time, because it's always something new, something different. I show up. I don't know if there's gonna be, you know, if there's gonna be seats for the audience to sit in. So it's just this big mystery.
It's always a big mystery. Last week I showed up at assisted living facility for Jewish folks, and I spent a cheeseburger on an umbrella, which is not kosher, and some places are very strict. I still did it. I didn't care.
Yeah.
But it was a really weird crowd, and I kind of yell during my act. You've seen my act. I scream at the audience. And all of a sudden, an old guy said to me, "Why are you yelling at us?" And I said, "To be honest, half of you are deaf. Raise your hand if you're deaf." And half of them raised their hands. So I'm correct in yelling at you. But you don't know what's going to happen. And for us, particular, it was a super low ceiling with a huge light fixture right under where we perform. So I had to kind of move off to the side. So especially for novelty people, there's so many more things, not just a stand-up where you go talking to a mic, all is well. We need to know where the lights are. We need to know what things are hanging down. Especially a lot of times people then, you don't expect a spotlight, and then all of a sudden they put a spotlight on you right when you're starting a bit.
Yeah.
There's a million things.
Yeah. I think we're all, you know, the world sees all the awesome things that we're doing and things like that. Do you have specifics or one specific standout thing of where you're just I can't believe I got myself into this mess?
Well, there's more than one. I mean, there's just tons. I mean, probably the most, there's so many things where people will call you last minute and they say, "Can you come do this thing? We've got a show that we need done," and you'll just say yes because it's money, and you get there and it's a terrible setup. there's no audience, or there is an audience, or there. Sometimes when you show up and it's a nursing home. I mean, I know I've been focusing now on old people, but I do kid shows, I do adult shows, I do YMCA shows, I do a ton of comedy clubs. I got bloodied once at a show. Has the audience ever bloodied you?
I think I bloodied myself.
I was bloodied by an audience member. It was a kid at an event in Marina Del Rey, and they kept on wanting to throw juggling balls at my face for some reason because they were bad, bad children. And one hit my glasses right where the bridge of the nose and the glasses meet. So how it just sort of hit it in the right way, so it just sliced open my nose. And because this was a last-minute show that they needed somebody, my kids were with me, so my kids saw me bloodied at a show as little trickles of blood dripped down my nose. And I still finished the show, and my kids asked me why. I said, well, I want to get a check. I enjoy getting paid. I wiped up, and I kept on going.
Yeah. Because
the kid just thought she was being funny. They always think they're being funny, you know, and it's a disaster sometimes.
Yeah.
You know? So that was in Marina Del Rey. So... avoid Marina Del Rey.
Just in general.
Just in general. Just avoid Marina Del Rey.
And if you see a kid with a juggling ball.
Yes.
Just
and if she was 8, and I didn't think, she was only like 8 feet away from me. She was like 8 years old, 8 feet away, going to throw it gently into me, and instead just whipped it as hard as she could, and it hit right on my glasses. And there was much humiliation and on everyone's part.
Yeah. So. All right, well, let's spin it back to the other direction. Maybe this should have been done in the intro, but for people who don't know what you do, they've kind of got a little bit of a thing. So part of your world is doing comedy juggling shows. Is that how you would describe
what
you do?
Yeah, but, you know, you're far more technical than I am as, like, the juggling, but I like... tennis racket, devil stick, that's one of my favorite things, because it's a little bit off the beaten path. There's guys that do it, obviously, but I don't see them as much as you know, technical jugglers. And then also, I spin a cheeseburger on an umbrella. And then one of the big things I've been doing the last couple years is getting audience shoes and saying I can balance them on the tip of my nose for 7 seconds. If I cannot, I owe you either $5, $10, $15, $20. And the fun part is then I get to make fun of people's shoes. So that's just an improv exercise.
Yeah.
So that's even almost just like a stand-up bit where I get to insult the audience and their footwear. And I can do that without bringing any props, which is always nice. If I'm just doing like a 5-minute spot at some club, I can just go in and get a few shoes, make fun of their shoes, balance them. And I do lose on occasion. I have like a 90% success rate, but I do pay out money sometimes. And then I get really bitter about it, but I do pay it out. So it's once again, the variety show arts, but it's like people have this weird thing. I don't know if you get into this. When they hear juggling show, all they think of, well, how interesting is balls for 45 minutes? Well, it's not that. It's a whole production. There's many different things, components coming in and out. And I think, like with magic, people know there's multiple tricks that make up this thing called magic. They're locked into their brain. So I'm starting to just say, you know, postmodern vaudeville or something like that. Because don't you think people get locked into, well, how can we have 45 minutes of juggling?
Yeah. You know? It's a thing. This might, I mean, there's people who are listening to this are a mix of performers and non-performers. But I think it's interesting for both sides to hear this in that, you know, my thing is like the variety show.
Right.
You know, so it was like, what is it? It's a one-man variety show. It's one guy who does like a bunch of different things. So, you know, notice there's no juggling
title. I think that's a brilliant thing because if people get weirded out by the word juggling, even though that's sometimes a main component of all our shows, somewhat, you know.
It's really interesting because people love juggling. When they're watching it.
Yes.
But not when you say that you do juggling, they're like, ugh. Or they think it's just a kid's show.
Yeah.
Or like they're like you said, oh, how long can that last? But then people are like, they start juggling and people are like calling their friends over. You got to see this guy.
Sure. Well, I think some of the auditions I've been on, people will say, yeah, I usually hate jugglers, but I actually liked you. It's a weird thing. It's a bizarre thing where I don't know what it is. Why it has that negative, but it's like mime. Like, Billy the Mime is really funny and does really unique stuff, but then you just think of, oh, a mime has this negative connotation in some ways. I don't know. It's just, it's a weird thing. But even now, stand-up, there's tons of stand-ups, and now people are even bored of stand-ups.
Yeah.
Unless they have a unique voice. So, it's like with anything.
What I was initially going in this direction to give, I wanted people to see a little bit about what your world was.
but you've done a, you've had like kind of a wide thing through in show business in general throughout the years of being involved. Do you want to fill in some of those brag-worthy moments?
No, it's been a lot of fun, but I'm still, as I say, every day I don't know what I'm doing the next day. You know, there'll be times when I'm like booked every single day, and then they'll be like, oh, I'm not doing anything for a week. Yeah. You know what I mean? But I'll go right back to the very, very, very beginning when I was 18 years old and I graduated high school with a 1.97 grade point average. I mean, that, you can't do anything with a 1.9.
That's less than half, I think.
That's a C minus. It's not even a 2.0, which is the standard of mediocre. This is slightly below mediocre. And I saw a play in New York City called Sugar Babies with a very famous juggler named Michael Davis, and I thought that was somewhat interesting. But I also really like Steve Martin and all his weird, idiosyncratic comedy, and those are the influences, along with like Penn and Teller and you know, Harry Anderson. And so I just started practicing, and then I auditioned in Flint, Michigan. There was an amusement park called Auto World that was featured in the movie Roger and Me, the Michael Moore film, and I got in. And so I had 2 years of just being able to, you know, 8 shows a day or whatever it is. When you first start out, they always ask for crazy stuff, and you're 20 and you don't know any different, so you're like, 8 shows a day, that sounds terrific. And you realize now I would never do 8 shows a day. You know what I mean? And then I just started from there, and then I started learning more and more tricks: regular juggling, bowling ball, hatchet, fire, devil stick stuff, Diablo, cigar boxes, balancing things on your nose or chin or whatever, unicycle, then trying to change it a little bit and figuring out the interaction with the audience. Through all that, then I started working a lot of amusement parks. I did Six Flags Over Georgia for like 3.5 years. I did some down at Busch Gardens for like half a year. I did Universal Studios Florida for like a year. That's when it kind of things changed. I got involved at Nickelodeon, and they knew that I knew all the weird novelty people in Orlando, so they hired me to talent coordinate a show called What Would You Do? Do you remember What Would You Do with Mark Summers?
Yeah, oh yeah.
The second season with, like, I don't know how many episodes we did, like 60 or 70 or whatever it was, I was the guy that got all the talent for that show.
Nice.
And that was during the time that, because I was at Nickelodeon, my girlfriend at the time was just working at Universal Studios Florida. I got her headshot into Nickelodeon, then she became, if you ever watch Guts, do you remember Guts?
Yeah.
And did we have this conversation? Then my wife is Mo from Guts.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. And so then that's how we got together. And then I just kept on doing my show, but then I got into like acting and writing, and I wrote a pilot for Nickelodeon and it never got produced. I wrote a talk show for Nickelodeon. We worked on that for a long time and never got produced. We did a lot of test pilots, but they never got aired, actually. Then I came to L.A., went toured Canada, did shows all across Canada at the the Canadian Fringe stuff, where it's busking. It's basically busking. And Canadians are much better when it comes time to pass the hat. You've probably busted in Canada.
A little bit. Not in Canada.
Not in Canada.
No.
Yeah, there in Canada. You do well in Canada, whereas it's sometimes a little bit more rocky in U.S. sometimes. And then I got to L.A., and I sent my headshots out, and then I did, like, I think I've done, like, 60 or so TV commercials.
Oh.
Really, I mean, and that's allowed me to have a pension, which is novelty performers we never even hardly think of, that now, when I retire, whatever age it is for SAG-AFTRA, they're going to give me, like, $1,000 a month, just because I've made enough money doing commercials. And I've done commercials with Ringo Starr, a Beatle, with Neil Patrick Harris, with... They spliced me in with Elvis, even though he was dead. I did an Energizer battery commercial with Elvis, and a bunch of other just dumb stuff, like some kind of phone thing in the Pacific Northwest, and McDonald's, Dr. Pepper, Diet Dr. Pepper. Let's see, UPS, IBM, tons of stuff doing commercials, and that was great and good money. But you age out of it. I'm aged out of that. I maybe do one audition a month, maybe now, whereas when I first got to L.A. in my 30s, let's see, I was 32, I was auditioning probably, I don't know, 6 times a week, something like that, and then you just, it's a youth market. Luckily, I still have my show. If I didn't have a show, I would be going insane right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because so far, I've still, nobody cares that I'm in my 50s, you know? That I'm
right.
I'm 53 and nobody cares. Because I still do an active show. People don't really quite know how old you are. When you're jumping around, balancing a wheelbarrow on your chin, there's not a thought of, is that guy 53?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Done a lot of really, been on Letterman, Sesame Street, a bunch of other shows. What Would You Do? I did 2 episodes of that before I was talent coordinator. Tons of little, I'm sure you've done this in little towns where like the local TV will have you on to do a little bit or whatever.
Yeah.
Tons of local little shows in Detroit and Atlanta when I was living in Atlanta. So that's just, you can be completely unknown.
Yeah.
And make a living, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
Yeah, that's something for me that's, like, interesting, because I think so many people think you need to, like, to be successful in this world, you need to be famous. And 99.99% of the people making a living in entertainment you've never heard of.
No, absolutely. And even the ones that are somewhat famous to us... if I went out to anybody and said, who's Michael Davis? They would not know who that name is. You know, if I would say, I'm trying to think of other, until this year, if I would say, who's the Passing Zone? No one would know who they are.
Yeah.
And they've been around forever.
And they're one of the most successful juggling groups ever.
Yes, exactly. It's like, that's what's so weird is I will tell names that I think are the heroes of the novelty world, but you can ask 100 people. You know, now the Passing Zone's on America's Got Talent, so this is all of a sudden they're being discovered after how many years?
Yeah, 35 years.
35 years. You know, that's the weirdest thing is these people are out there doing shows, you know, making
their big break.
Yeah, making their big break after 30-some years or whatever. But that's what's weird is in fact, that weird show that I did at the assisted living home, this woman came up to me and said, "Are you doing okay? Are you making a living? Are you making money doing this?" And it's like, and then she was like, "Do you have to have another job?" That's the one thing. Do you get this?
People always ask
you if you have another job. And I was like, "No, I don't have another job. This is the thing." And I include, if we get booked as an actor or as a writer, it's all show business, you know, because, yes, obviously writing is another job. Sometimes I've been booked to write a pilot or write stuff for Game Show Network or whatever, but I'm still doing my show, you know, and I'm still writing and being creative, you know what I mean? So... But a lot of us are out there, you know, and you have no idea that there's a ton of people you don't know that are really successful.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I think there's something, I'm not sure how well I'll be able to word this. It's always a good intro before you say something. but to give it, I like to have these things on here, a little bit of a inspirational, tone. And I was talking to somebody else about this of how hard it is to do that. And because I get it all the time. Do you have a day job? From entertainment people and non-entertainment people, they're both kind of just assume that you have a bartending job or a waiting tables job or something like that, one of the typical things. And I think on both sides of that, whether you're in showbiz, most of the people listening to this at least have some interest in being involved in show business world, that it's pretty normal to have a side job.
Oh, sure.
So that's not like you're not making it if you're listening and have this side thing. That's great. Sometimes I wish I had that so I could take
I've often said, I'll go work at Starbucks. If all of a sudden I don't get gigs for a while, I'm fine with going and working at Starbucks. I don't have a problem. You do whatever you got to do.
Yeah.
And then the next thing, I had a guy that was, do you remember that sci-fi show Babylon 5?
Yeah.
We were hanging out at a party and it was kind of successful in the sci-fi genre. And he was telling me he had a really cool 3-episode arc where, you know, his character got to do a lot of amazing things. But he, just because he got those 3 episodes, that doesn't mean he's fine financially. Yeah. So he still had his waiter job.
Yeah.
And people would... He would come over and they would be like, "Aren't you Gorgon from Babylon 5? And he'd go, yeah, what would you like to drink? You know? And you have to remember that you can be a guest star on a TV show. that only means you're going to make a few thousand dollars, and then in residuals, maybe a few thousand dollars. What is that, $4,000 or something? You need other stuff. That's why while I did all my TV commercials, sometimes they would pay well. You know, the best I ever did, I'll even talk about financials. Like, one time I did an IBM that aired worldwide. We did print. It was like $120,000. But then I did it like a McDonald's. It was just regional, and it was like $3,000. And this is, you know, spanned over the 21 years I've been in L.A., you know, that's why I have a live juggling show. And they're like, well, why do you go juggle at libraries when you're making all this money at these commercials? Well, sometimes you know you're not.
Yeah.
You know, I saw a post, like, Scott Land... Somebody posted, he's always doing all these shows for famous people, which me and Scott did a show for Elon Musk's house, and also like Morgan Freeman was there and a bunch of other like celebrities, and we did a show there, but we also do shows at libraries because we know we're not always getting big paydays.
Yeah.
And we love doing shows. You know, I never think it's bad when I'm making like, I make $325 for a library show. Sometimes I'll do two or three a day, or sometimes just one. But then sometimes you get called to go out of town for like $2,500.
Yeah.
You know, people don't understand. If I only waited for the $2,500 shows, I'd probably at most make, you know, probably about $15,000 a year.
Right.
And I can't live on $15,000 a year. You know what I mean? I got a wife and two kids. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. So I think that part of that hustle and... So both sides of that for people who are trying to get into something. And you said something earlier about doing that Six Flags gig or one of the theme park gigs when you were first starting, and they said, hey, you're doing 8 shows a day. You're like, yes, awesome.
I was like 20, and I'm like, yes, this is awesome. I get to, and it was like, that sounds great. I physically don't think I could do 8 shows a day now, you know?
Yeah. But what is that in the, so part of my big thesis, I guess you could say, of what I talk about and stuff is jumping in and taking that first step of the idea of just go. When you have an idea, don't get caught up on the, you know, possible roadblocks that might, or things, the possible problems or something, you know. For me, it's like, I always think about same thing. Like, I just found out yesterday that I'm going on to a cruise ship in, like, 3 days.
Wow.
For 2 weeks. Yeah. And that's, like, a new world to me. For me, like, cruise ships, I never performed on them or anything. So, and I'm just, like, it's kind of freaking me out because there's so many of these things. Like, sure. I don't have a flight to Florida yet. Right. And it's in a couple days. Like, I don't know what my act is going to be in because I'm part of a different show. I'm part of a variety show on the ship. So there's... There's all these things that are unknowns to me right now. And like I said, I don't know how I'm getting there. And then like, how do I get to the port? And then how do I get on the ship? And then there's customs because we go to a different country. And then there's like all, I could go on and on and on. And that's what my brain has been doing for the past day. And then I know because I always do this, I'm going to get there and I'm going to ask somebody, hey, what do I need to do? They're like, oh, go over there. And then I'm going to be the ship. And then I'm going to be, I didn't need to know how to do anything.
Well, it's like I tell my kids because I get so anxious about so many things. And I just say, it'll work out.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is, there is a possibility it won't work out.
Yeah.
But it'll still work out unless you're mugged or something. Yeah. You know what I mean? It all works out.
And so, like, you'd be like, okay.
Yeah. The one cruise ship I did, when I got to the Cayman Islands, somebody was supposed to be there to pick me up, and they just forgot to tell that person, and my phone had died because it was a long flight, and then I was in a foreign country in the middle of the night at 10 o'clock, and there was nobody around. I thought there'd be a ton of people around. And so I said to a guy who was like a taxi guy, I said, do you know where they take all the Disney talent? And he goes, yeah, I do. I said, will you take me over there? And he took me to a hotel, and they had my name at the hotel. So I talked my way into getting a ride. And then I called them and said, hey, no one picked me up, but I'm here. So I figured it out. You know what I mean? You know?
Yeah, and that's the idea of that, the just go theme of, like, have this idea, do it, and figure it out. Like, not always, have right. be prepared, don't be reckless, and, right. you know, but like if you kind of think of, do what you can, and then take that first step, and then do what you can, it's one like, step at a time.
It's like all what we do. We either auditioned for something, or we put an ad in something, or we got an entertainment agent, or, you know, we started learning tricks, and then some tricks people like, some people don't. For the life of me, I always tried to work on a spinning plate routine, but I could never make it interesting. Yeah. I mean, I spent so much time trying to figure out a way that I liked spinning plates, and I couldn't, because I had this theme where I had another device spinning the plates at the same time, and there were all these things, and I couldn't make it work for my personality, you know. But then there's other things. I balanced an audience member's shoe, and people like it, and it was so simple. Yeah. You know, we don't know what the simple things yeah. are, the complex things, and also just getting in. People always say, well, how did you start? I looked in a paper and said, talent show. And that's how, did you ever do that? When you first started learning tricks, they said, we have a talent show. Do you want to be in it? And I said, yes. And yeah. then I started winning like $50, $100 yeah. at like little talent shows in Michigan.
Yeah.
And then you just build from that one moment in time. You know, and then you got to be prepared for, like, when I was working at Universal Studios Florida doing street shows for Universal Studios, a woman said, wow, you really understand the audience and the kids. Do you want to work at Nickelodeon? And I said, well, I'm doing this. A week later, they didn't renew my contract after like a year. And I called her up and said, yeah. And that's how I got into Nickelodeon. I'd never been a producer. I'd never studied producing TV in college, but she just thought I'd be good at it. And that's how I got to be a producer at Nickelodeon for a couple of years.
Yeah, that's you know? Great.
And I just said yes. It was that right. kind of like just say yes thing.
Yeah. Well, that's another thing that is super valuable there that I'd like to just make a note of to reinforce of, like you said, you never studied to be a producer or went to school or something. And I think so, a lot of people use that as an excuse whether that if they're trying to get into something or something, they'll say, well, I'm not qualified.
Right.
You know what? I wrote a book.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's published. It's yeah. like a real book. And it's on, you know, you can go online and buy it. And it's printed and people, like, it looks like a real book.
It is a real book.
And I'm like, cause, yes. yeah, because it is.
Yes.
And I could have said, well, who am I to write this book and then never started it? Or I could have said, I'm going to do it. Because I am qualified. Who is the other guy that wrote the book?
You can also take this as far as, like, well, there's so many more successful people.
Yeah.
Don't compare yourself to uber successful. Say, I'm going to do this as an exercise for myself.
Yeah.
Listen, when I first started, you would see, like, this Anthony Gatto just doing these incredible things. And you're like, I will never know how long, no matter how long I practice,
yeah.
will I ever be like Anthony Gatto or... Who are the brothers, sister, the... How do you say their name?
Gulchang.
Whatever. They say they're the Russian... Yeah. You know. And yet, you have to figure, there's a place for what you do. You yeah. can't look at, well, there's these phenomenal... I will never be a Beatle. Listen, doesn't matter if you're a Beatle. What if you're just like Jonathan Richman, who is a really cool singer-songwriter, has really funky, bizarro punk lyrics. And I saw him at a coffee shop in Orlando... with 25 people, and he gets a percussionist from every town he's in, and he was far more exciting than when I saw Rod Stewart at the Hollywood Bowl. It was far more interesting.
Yeah.
Do what you do, and say yes to that.
Yeah. Going back to, yeah, so again, reinforce that of, like, there's a market in that for you.
Right.
You're you yeah. because there's a space in this world for you and what you are interested in, what you do, no matter how weird and wacky it is.
Yeah, and then you'll find your fan base. And maybe you don't have a you know, Kevin Hart fan base.
Yeah.
But if you have enough people that like you, you'll do okay.
Yeah.
You know?
Going back to initially when you started performing, you said you do a talent show, win $50. It reminded me of this thing I did. I was playing music throughout like high school, and then I always juggled kind of for fun, but then music kind of transitioned from actually being on stage then. Like, I didn't really perform juggling and variety stuff till I was in college. So I was like later into that. I wasn't doing
right.
my friends' birthday parties sure. when we were both 12 or something like a lot of people were. Anyway, I was in college, and then I remember, like, we did this one show, and I didn't know how much we were getting paid. I was in, like, a juggling troupe. There was three of us at this one show, and they were like, yeah, we'll cover your, and at that time, it was like, we're gonna do this even if they don't pay us, so I never asked how much we were gonna get paid. I was just like, oh, they're giving us something, so that means we're gonna say yes. Get there and, like, do the show. We did, like, 15 minutes or something. And then they gave us, there was three of us, and they gave us a $150 check. And I was, like, so amazed.
Oh, yeah.
Because I thought it was going to be, like, $25 for us split. So, like, they're going to cover our gas to drive down the road or whatever.
Those are great stories, because sometimes you just do stuff. When I think I mentioned to you this before, I did a lot of warm-up on sitcoms. You're the guy that hangs out with the audience. And when before I knew about, like, I just helped out with my friend's thing, and I wasn't getting paid for this at all, but the other warm-up really liked me and wanted me to get into this, and I thought, well, maybe you get a couple $100 for this, and I was like, ah, whatever. But he told me it was like $2,000 to $5,000, and then I kind of figured out how to get the gigs by just calling, cold calling producers on sitcoms, and then I started making like $2,000 a night in L.A., and it was because I had no idea how much it was until I started getting into the world.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The weird thing is, you say you were excited about making $50. Listen, yeah. I still sometimes, like, when I'm doing a stand-up set, I'll throw in $25 or $50, because you're in stand-up in L.A. You don't make money in L.A. doing stand-up. That's just one thing I want to make perfectly clear. You do something at, like, I don't know, Flappers or the Hermosa Beach or the Improv or whatever. I think Improv sets are like $8. People are getting $8 a set. I don't think people understand.
Like, they can't quite get that $10 bill.
I know. It's so weird. It's something bizarre and ridiculous in L.A. So whenever we're talking about stand-up in L.A., it's very rare that you're going to make very much money unless you, like, say you might do a headlining weekend and maybe get a couple $100. You know, usually you make more money in comedy clubs on the road. You know?
Yeah, that's cool. So how do you stay? I mean, you've been in this game and in this world and seen more than I have, just by the fact that you're a little bit older than I am. And for myself, sometimes there's some days when I'm just like, I'm feeling like, you know, too many people said no that week.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. I think the thing that is now is longevity has kept me going, where when I first got to L.A., it was much more difficult because I was like, I don't know anybody, and I'm doing dumb shows. I'm not making very much money. And then once you get a lot of really cool things under your belt in L.A., and then you start developing a fan base and people that hire you regularly, and then, you know, you'll go in and out, like, you know, you'll have, like, I had a warm-up gig on That 70s Show. I was making a lot of money. It was really fun. We were pregnant with our first child, and then they fired me off the show. And then what my favorite thing about that firing was, every single episode of that show, I did, like, 14 episodes in a row doing warm-up on this show, and I would always ask, is there anything you want me to do different? And they said, no, everything's great. And then the 14th show, the producer that hired me, he was like, listen, I think you're great, but the creator of the show, he's going through a divorce, and he just feels the show's getting weird, and there's not as many laughs, so he thinks that maybe it might be you. And so I got fired. And then I got paid for a week of not doing shows. Then I was hired back for two more episodes, but then fired again. That was that. Once you start having some success, and when I got fired, I was really upset. But my warm-up guys that I knew, they said, oh, listen, in L.A., you're going to be hired and fired and hired and fired and told no a lot and told yes. So it's just irrelevant. It's not relevant. Yeah. The no's are not relevant, because you know that there will be a yes somewhere past the no's. You know what I mean? It's sort of like with commercial auditions or whatever else. And so you just keep on checking. Listen, this James Corden, Late Late Show with James Corden, I'm doing tomorrow. That just came out of nowhere, because I think it was just a thing that they sort of were looking at all us weird novelty guys. I know David Diebel did it, and that is exciting, but in a weird way, it's good. But you got to stay level-headed so that when there's the no's, you got to keep the no's and the yes's sort of equal in a weird way. You know, because there's always going to be a lot of no's. There's going to be followed by yeses. And you just, I think the once you have a history somewhere, the no's get less harsh.
Yeah.
You know.
That's good, because, you know, it is for everyone, in whatever world you're in, that's the case. There's people telling you no all the time.
Oh, sure.
More so than they say yes.
More so. That is absolutely true. Many more no's than yeses.
Yeah, so there's something in there. There's some profound thing about that of just, you know, keep going and keep asking, because, you know, if it's like, if you're going to get 10, 1 out of 10, yeah. Like, you can't wait.
Yeah,
look for that one. Yeah, you just gotta
keep on going to the no's.
Keep firing away.
My favorite no, I'll tell you my favorite no, is this guy wanted to kind of manage me for fairs up in, like, there's a big fair conference, sort of like a NACA for colleges. It was in Wyoming, and he just loved me. He thought I was so amazing. He thought fairs will love you. You know, fairs, it's like, I think he said we could get like a grand a day, which would be pretty good, and you'll be working all summer. And I do my showcase, and I don't know what it was, but there was something about all the cowboys that were booking the fair. And maybe it was because Neil Patrick Harris was in my intro. It says he's done this, this, and this, and he's appeared in commercials with Neil Patrick Harris, and Neil's gay. And this was a lot of very, very, very manly men that they were like, they had a moment where they're like, look, he's worked with Neil Patrick Harris? Isn't that guy gay? He works with gay people. I don't know if that's what it was, but they were not into what I was doing. I had to sit in a hotel room and watch them walk by, because you kind of sit in your hotel room waiting to be booked with this booker guy, and he felt terrible because he likes me. No one booked me. Not one fair. And this is after having so much success, other stuff. And I come home 10:30 in the morning on audition for Actors Gang to do their variety show with Tim Robbins, and they love me. And Tim Robbins, who's a big famous actor, really digs what I'm doing. And then Norman Lear, who has had a history in show business, comes to the show, sees me, and then has me come to his house to do a show and pay me really well. So the abject sadness of Wyoming, sitting in this small town, I think it was Casper, one of these tiny towns, very cold and bitter, and everything seemed cold and bitter, to have this humiliation. You go through it to the other side, where Tim Robbins, this actor of Shawshank Redemption, whatever, is telling you how much he's thrilled you're in the show with him, and then Norman Lear, this producer forever, and then casting directors coming up to you afterwards. So it's what's the truth? There is no truth. There's going to be no's, there's going to be yes's.
Yeah, so there's something again in there of that outside people shouldn't be determining how you're feeling at the moment of that, because sometimes people are going to, if you listen to them, you're going to think you're pretty worthless.
Oh, oh my gosh, if I would have listened to all the no's and all the, like, looking in at me, like the fact that, like, these, like the mangy petting zoo probably booked more shows than I did. Like, there were these signs for these really sad animals to book a petting zoo.
Yeah.
You know, and so it was, but you just muddle through to the next opportunity or not, you know?
There's Alex Clark who...
And I want to just mention, my daughter, I found out, is a big fan of Alex Clark and his animation. I said, she goes, you know Alex Clark, he hangs out with Dominic's. And I go, well, I know Alex. And she goes, you know Alex? Like, all the people I've met, she doesn't care about. Like, I've met celebrities.
Yeah.
And she goes, you know Alex Clark? I go, yeah, we're kind of friends. We chat and hang out. And she goes, oh my God, do you think we can meet him sometime? So, Alex.
And so that is a perfect thing of where I was going to go with that, of Alex, who was on this show. You guys can listen, but he was one of the earlier ones. Who is a friend of ours in LA, and he's a juggler, but he also makes YouTube videos and has a huge following on YouTube. So his YouTube channel is massive. He's got like millions of views.
And he still feels like he's not at the top level yet when I talk to him.
And he's like, because he hit, I think, two, I was like, he texts me all the time, and he was like, oh, I need to, like, work on... he said something. Somebody showed up at his hotel room or something, and I was like, it must suck having fans, you know, because he was complaining about it.
I saw that post. He went out to eat with his fan.
Yeah. And then, and then he was, like, not complaining about it, but he was like, I gotta do something about this. Like, I can't have these people showing up at my hotel room.
Right.
But, like, it's great. And I was like, oh, it must suck having fans.
Right.
And he's like, he's like, yeah, but I need more.
Yeah.
And I was like, I have, like, hundreds of YouTube subscribers. You have 200,000.
Right.
And he, like, responds, he's like, 250,000.
Right. Got another 50.
Because it's just happening fast now. And I was like that 50,000 just clicks up. But then, he was at VidCon, and I saw the video of VidCon, and he's signing autographs, and he has a 45-minute line for people that want to meet him.
Right.
And sign autographs. And then literally yesterday, he sends me a text message with a video in it, and it's like, today's gig, and it's like outside.
Oh, I saw that gig. I saw that same thing.
You know, and
nobody was there.
It's like, nobody there.
This is so perfect what we're talking about. He's got all these fans, it's just empty chairs.
Yes. So it's like, one day he's sitting at home in his, like, apartment in LA, like, making videos that are going to go out to millions of people, and then, like, people, like, kids across the country.
My daughter, who's 11, I've met, like, tons of, like, Sofia Vergara, tons of people in, like, rock groups, different things. When I said I knew Alex Clark, she was just like, what? You know Alex? And because that's part of her world.
Yeah. Did you tell him yet?
I did tell him. I think I saw him at Booby Trap. But as I said, my daughter. And so he said the next time they have VidCon, he's going to try to snag her some swag. So.
Oh, nice.
So I might try to get her to VidCon then, because she is totally into that whole subculture, which, trust me, I mean, I try to keep up with the trends, but there are so many up-and-coming, like, people that make videos that make a lot of money, and I have no idea who they are.
Yeah, oh yeah. Well, yeah. It was like something about, I saw this one thing, and it was like, they polled teenagers, and it was like, who's the biggest star in the world right now? Asking them. And like, people like Leonardo DiCaprio, and people that we kind of think of would
sure,
like
absolutely.
Johnny Depp and Leonardo DiCaprio and George Clooney are like, you know, this ultimate celebrity status, like the top 10 or something. I don't know what it was, but it was something like the top 10. There was no like traditional celebrities
in it.
Like,
weird video
it was
star,
all
yeah.
like, you know,
PewDiePie
like YouTube.
Or
Smosh
Brothers.
You know, yeah, Casey Neistat is kind of huge now, and then...
I don't know why I say, is it Smosh Brothers or just Smosh? For some reason, I added Brothers on it. It's just Smosh.
Yeah. Yeah, and those guys, so it's like, that's the biggest, and it's like, you walk down to most people in the street, and they don't know who those people are.
No, absolutely.
But then they're getting 8 million views every day, like, more than... any TV show is getting per
day. And they get to do it in their houses and apartments.
Yeah.
And they figured out how to monetize it. Listen, God bless them. God, I think that's awesome. You know, and my daughter goes through all the different people. And she'll also tell me their arcs. Like, she's, they were okay. And then they kind of fell down. And she'll show me their celebrity arc in the video world, you know.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
You know? So, yeah, she, that's so funny because that's the thing that she loves. My older daughter, my 14-year-old, for some reason, she's just like, that's not interested in that at all.
Yeah.
She's just more traditional in some ways.
Well, we'll bring it back to the message of the theme of this is, goes back to that of get started. If you want to be a YouTube person,
my gosh,
you want to have a thing, it's almost...
It couldn't be easier now. If you have an iPhone and a computer, you can do whatever you want, as long as you want, and no one says no. It's amazing.
And I'll take that further, if you have an iPhone, period...
Oh, yeah, you could
like,
just do everything on your iPhone.
You
could actually download everything from your iPhone.
Yeah.
You know, that's the amazing thing is, it's like, for every filmmaker who back 30 years ago needed to get a crew and whatever, Tangerine was filmed on an iPhone.
Yeah.
iPhone 5, I believe it was, you know? And so it's like, you really have no excuses anymore.
Yeah.
To be creative.
Right. No excuses. Keep going. Yeah, and you'll be potentially probably a bigger star than if you went a traditional. Chase Jarvis was talking about it. We've finally hit the point where, and in his, you know, there's to go on auditions and stuff. Right. If you're in showbiz, that's a necessary thing. But also, now, like, if you keep getting no's, make the film that you want.
You can,
like,
make the yes.
Yeah, spend a half hour every morning doing your talk show on your couch.
Oh, absolutely.
Which is something that I'm mostly talking to myself right now, because I want to be doing more of that. And I'm committing myself. Alex has kind of challenged me to make a video a day for a year, and I keep putting it off. Because
you know, I'm going to challenge myself, because I was once I did America's Got Talent, and this year, and before I even got to my trick, Simon buzzed me because Heidi was helping me, and she was having a little match between her and Heidi and Simon. So Heidi threw a cheeseburger at Simon, so he buzzed me before I even started. Then I spin my cheeseburger on my umbrella. Then Mel B buzzes me, and then I finished my bit, and Mel B said, "I just think I could do what you do." She thought she could spin a cheeseburger on an umbrella, a thing that took me so many years to learn. So then I just went through and started writing every bit, everything that I could think I could do for like a whole year, like doing like maybe every other day a video, every other day, or even every day, variations on juggling and weird bits, lighting things on fire, doing them in my backyard, and it's all going to be titled, "Can Mel B Do This?" It's just an attack on her thinking she could do this. And so I need to challenge myself just for the fun of it, because I took my iPhone out and put it on slow-mo mode and spun my cheeseburger flaming. I doused it with lighter fluid, and just seeing a flaming cheeseburger was very hypnotic and gratifying. So you can do anything in your backyard.
Yeah.
People are doing these bottle flip videos that are getting like, you know, 10, 20, 30 million views.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's, again, like, I mean, Alex is pretty transparent. We'll go with Alex. He's the closest person that I know that has that level of in that world.
Well, and they don't even know him as a juggler. I said, "Do they know you as a juggler?" He goes, "No, not really."
Yeah, like,
that's really funny.
Yeah, he like tries to put it in there a little bit, but it's not really about that. And it's like, you know, that's, again, like I said, he's very pretty open with his stuff, and you know, I see him get fan mail, and it's like he's working right now out of his apartment. Yeah. I don't think he'll mind if I say that. I think people know that that's where he's.
Well, listen, in LA, it's almost impossible to have a house.
Yeah,
that's one thing that's true. I got lucky. We bought our house 15 years ago, like for like $235,000. It's now worth, I think it's like $690,000. So if we tried to buy a house now, it would be impossible.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? So everybody in LA, and actually they now show that it's better to have an apartment and live lean.
Yeah.
Did we talk about Tiny House Movement?
A little bit, I think, because I did that video.
Yeah, I saw that.
I stayed in a video of a tiny house.
I love the Tiny House Movement. If you're single and wanna you don't want to invest in this big behemoth of a dumb house, Tiny House Movements are the way to go. I love the Tiny House Movement.
Yeah.
I got two kids. I can't have a tiny house.
I think I just need to get like a RV to park out there and get rid of the apartment.
Yeah.
Well, cool. I think there's some cool stories in there. Just to wrap it up, I know I touched on the theme before, kind of throughout, about that, like, in what we're doing and in whatever we're doing, people listening to this want to go out and create something or are interested in making something. For me, my thing is that the theme of it is just go. You could think about it. The more you think about it, the more you're going to be talking yourself out of it. For me, that's how it usually goes.
Oh, absolutely.
So get started. If you know, want to start a podcast, like, stop thinking about what kind of microphone you need and record it into your iPhone, which is in your pocket.
Yes.
If you want to make a talk show, stop thinking about what kind of microphone and camera and backdrop you need. Get a poster of your name or something for $20 at the store and start holding it. Whatever else there might be of this, what do you want to start? And that we come up with these silly things. Well, I don't have $400 for a podcast microphone, you know, so
listen,
I'll save up, and then it never happens, because once you have the $400, now you have a new excuse. So the point is, just get started. And my question to you is, besides the just get started theme, What advice do you have to somebody who wants to start anything, whatever it is that they want to be, whether they're in show business or not?
Mitigate the failures. Mitigate the failures. Because much like juggling, things are going to drop and fall apart. So you might start the podcast. You might have zero people listening. Just keep on going. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
When you're practicing whatever you're practicing, it's great that you can practice. The next thing you know, you might have one listener. And then you might figure out a way to put it on better RSS feeds.
Yeah.
How does it go? And then some keywords, do a little promotion on your Facebook page, and you have 10 listeners. And then you just need one person that really digs it to promote it on their blog. And they have, you don't know what's going to happen in your future. You don't know your story arc. I can tell you personally, when I grabbed a cheeseburger and spun it on an umbrella, I didn't know that show, that trick would get me on the David Letterman show, a commercial for Frank Sinatra CD, doing it on the James Corden show, did it on, there was another show. Now I'm even forgetting all the shows. I just did it because I thought it might be cool. There's other tricks I've practiced forever. No one ever likes them. There's going to be stuff that's not going to be, people
yeah.
won't like. Just do something.
Yeah.
And then keep on going.
It's the same as the get through the 9 no's to get to the 1 yes.
Yes.
Get through, keep work. You know, you can't wait until to try to get that perfect moment for that yes or whatever it is, or for that thing to click. You have to, every viral video ever was an accident.
Oh, no, absolutely.
Everything was just I like doing this, so I'm going to keep
doing
it.
Most viral videos are somebody just enjoying doing something,
yeah.
and they didn't care if people watched it or not.
Yeah.
And then people dig it.
Yeah.
You know?
Cool. I think that's a good wrap. If people want to find out more about you, your website is
MichaelRayner.com. My Instagram is Broken Juggler. My Twitter is Broken Juggler. And that's it. That's easy to find me and get me.
Cool. You guys can hit him up. And that's it for us.
Thank you.
Sweet.
All right. Thanks, man.
That's it. You made it to the end. Thank you for listening. Thank you for listening all the way to the end. Appreciate everyone who's been listening and leaving feedback. As always, if you enjoy the show and want to make sure you don't miss anything, make sure you subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you're listening, the podcast app, and leave a rating or review on whatever platform that you're listening, because that really helps out the show. And in addition to the podcast, if any of you like visuals with your entertainment instead of just the audio, I'm doing a lot of stuff on my YouTube channel right now. So just search my name on YouTube, Chris Ruggiero, and you can find that out. Interviews will be posted there. And what I'm going to also start doing is doing these podcast interviews and film them, so you'll be able to watch us have the conversations as well. So go check out YouTube and type in my name, Chris Ruggiero, and subscribe over there. We're building that up a little bit. So thanks again for listening. Thanks, Michael Rayner, for joining me and sharing these amazing stories. And I will talk to you guys soon. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to the Chris Ruggiero Podcast.